Welcome back. I hope you've had a good break. We're just now going to continue our conversation. I'm here with Steve Sanders. Now, before the break, you will have heard how Steve got to the point where he understood that there's something that he could do to help all of us understand what looks like an incredibly complex and difficult issue to get our heads around in a way that makes it accessible. Because I think, and you know, forgive me if I'm wrong, Steve, your premise is if we can all understand it, that we can get on and do something about it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
So tell us, Steve, tell us then, you know, you had the idea for the book. Was it just plain sailing? It flew out of your typewriter, or was it a whole lot of research? Tell us a little bit about the actual coming together.
Well, I employed somebody to coach me, Mindy Gibbons Klein, and she is a real taskmaster. She's an incredibly experienced, clever coach for book authors.
Yeah.
And the reason for that was I knew I lacked the discipline to see this through in a time frame that would make the required impact. So I worked in quite intensively over a 6-month period, to the point where final draft was edited by the publisher a couple of times. There's a team of people doing all of that in the publisher, and it's now gone through for final pre-production, checks and what have you. But it was a process of personifying who I wanted to talk to. And I actually had a few people in mind, and one of them was the test reader for the book as well, which he didn't know that he was one of the personas. When he did the test reading, he came back gushing. And this is a very senior guy. He's at the top of one of the world's largest manufacturing intelligence and technology companies. And he and I worked together previously, and I kind of understood the personal and business challenges and the kind of things that he was wrestling with at a very personal level. I understood it because I'd coached him for quite a while. And so I wrote to him. Yeah, I decided what would I say to him to make things better at multiple levels, for his family, for his professional life, for himself. And organized that into the flow of this. And of course, from that comes, when you're talking to a person, you know, you're talking to a collective of people that are kind of like that person. And he'd worked in a small business before becoming the president of this very large business. And he came from a very large business in the past. So he kind of understood the dynamics of SMEs, startups, and large organizations.
Whole supply chains.
That's right. The whole thing. And so in writing this down, then a lot of my own feelings and thoughts came into it, and the structure, more importantly. What I do in life is I bring structure to ideas, and I filter out to find the best ideas, and I put the best structure in place, and then I simplify it and I make it easier, and I motivate people to go and use it, and then I stay with it until they deliver the results. So that's what I do in life, and that's what I try to embed into this piece of work, which is my ultimate way of spreading what I think and do to as many people as possible, because I know I'm not going to be in the room and able to talk to them or as much as I'd like to.
Yeah. So the person you've been speaking to that you've written this book for, they came back and they, as you say, they were gushing about what they read. What do you anticipate are going to be amongst the first things they're going to start doing that might be different?
Well, I believe this, you know, before you can realize the potential from this, you have to open your mind. And one of the things that I challenge is people's perceptions of what companies are there for, people's perceptions of what they need to be in order to be good at this thing called business leadership. And there's, you know, it takes a certain type of self-assuredness to open yourself up to be contradicted.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to, in this particular case, step out of your frame of reference and your common way of thinking about what your business is there for and what you are there for as a leader. And you want to open yourself up to all of the contrarians and non-conformists that are around you, because the one thing you need to achieve is to find the unforeseeable.
Mm.
Those things that people are kind of holding at the back of their minds and unwilling to share with you because they feel vulnerable anyway as an employee or as a supplier to your company. And COVID has made it even more so, right? I mean, everybody feels a bit vulnerable, and they're certainly not going to contradict the way things are, even if they think it's a good idea, right? So you have to become as inclusive and open as possible in your own mind, as well as in the way that you behave with other people. So I think one of the first things is to say, you might feel at every fiber of you as though you need to have absolute confidence that you've got it nailed. You know your market, you know your business, you know the product, you know your feature-based differentiation. You are absolutely confident and fixed in that confidence. And you've got a group of people that you are measuring and driving to perform within that paradigm. And you've got to just step out of that. Okay, I'm not asking you to drop it and let it all fall apart, because that would be stupid, right? Because you need all of that to be in place to carry on succeeding. But if you are going to really open up and find what your future self and your future business is going to be doing, so that you can compete in the way of the future and not in the way of the past, you have to allow yourself to take on board the inputs of non-conformists and contrarians that are around you. So mm-hmm. that kind of is something that I'm trying to soften people up in the first part of the book, to saying, let's just step aside from what we think companies are there for, because it's only really in the UK since 1855 that the limited liability company has existed. And in the US since 1811, I think, or 1811. But you know, that is a paradigm that has focused everybody on it needs to be about profit, and profit first and profit last. And you know what? You can excuse yourself from all the ills that you leave behind yourself in the supply chain, as long as you're looking after your shareholders. And think of the boss of that ferry company recently, who was genuinely convinced he was doing the right thing because it was all only 100% about the profit of his company. But what did the market tell him? And the governments and regulators told him, the other two parts of the virtuous triangle told him, I'm sorry, mate, you got it wrong this time, right? You might have protected the profits short term of your shareholders, but in doing so, you disregarded the stakeholders. Okay. And in disregarding your stakeholders, we are going to sink your ships, metaphorically speaking. And I think that that might unfold as the future for that business. And that's what I've heard from people and how they've responded to that decision. And I'd suggest that is just symptomatic of the great shift, is that people may not yet have alternatives to your product that are ethical alternatives that really do study the value chain and the supply chain to look for vulnerabilities and really genuinely find opportunities to do good and do better. Okay, in the supply chain and value chain of their business. Those alternatives might not exist yet, but pretty soon they will. And as soon as they do, that's the company that's going to get the loyalty of customers and the best employees. And those companies that don't do that kind of thing are going to lose out. It's in my view, a practical inevitability. So much so that when I see people still arguing and debating about whether this matters, it's like time machining back to 1995 and seeing a board of directors still talking about whether the internet was a real thing.
Yeah.
And thinking only 10 years later whether any of them would have still had a job if they were still asking that same question. We are now only a few years away from the point when, you know, the next unicorn businesses are not going to have anything to do with social media or what have you. The next unicorns are going to be all about carbon reduction and sustainability and resilience, right?
Yeah.
That is absolutely what everybody's interested in doing. So my argument is that it is from that opening up moment that you then look at ways of recalibrating in order to dominate your competitive environment with something that really matters, right?
So where are you seeing the green shoots? So Changemaker Group, for example, we've been on a journey to understand the whole B Corp setup, a business that's of benefit to the community, that basically that's the what B Corp is all about. And that's been set up in a way that is driven by the organizations, as opposed to the CSR process that was maybe driven by, you know, again, what's a tick box almost on annual accounts. Mm-hmm. So I can see a little bit there. We're also working with another organization called Spirit of the Game, which is all about what's the impact your organization is going to make. Mm-hmm. So those are the little green shoots that I can see at a business level. What else are you seeing?
More than I can shake a stick at, actually. I try to do this at multiple levels to keep myself in touch with reality. So I'm involved with the One at Warwick Manufacturing Group to understand what academia is doing with government departments in the UK. I'm involved with people in different countries. So US academics, Santa Clara, MIT, and academics across the UK. I'm involved with senior business leaders, Johnson Controls, Hexagon, at the banks, okay. So I talk to these people to understand whether this resonates and whether it makes sense and what are they doing about it. I see a spread of reactions sometimes, CSR, corporate social responsibility, ESG, whatever the label, and a lot of companies still have a website that says, this is our ESG website, there you go now, shut up and carry on doing what you were doing. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, that's going to be dated very soon. In fact, it's already dated. It's already useless. I've attended an Institute of Directors event recently where you had a lot of the people who historically, and people have spent 5, 10, 15 years of their careers in these roles within large organizations where they've literally been sidelined and fed sweet corn and just to make sure that the brand presence is... It's not greenwashing, but it's basically doing enough to satisfy, you know, the shareholders that we're not going to fall behind. They are now, the expectations on them is really scaling up to the level that they are being asked to talk sense to the board.
Mm.
And one of the drivers of this is the conditions that are being laid out by investors. So private equity, venture capitalists are now using a long-term value and ESG lens on whether they invest in companies or not.
Mm.
Okay, impact lens. And the reason they're doing that is because they know what I know. They know that the companies they're investing in will simply not be able to compete in 5 to 10 years' time. They will be irrelevant unless they are pure as pure can be in their supply chain or in what their impact. Okay, so this is there's many of these indicators out there, green shoots as you call them, and I see examples of very real examples of organizations that have already completed that journey. I mean, one particular company, their entire, and I'm talking about a large company here, I may or may not have mentioned them yet, okay, but a very large company whose head of strategy has told me that over the last 2 years, they've already completely reformatted everything that they say on their website. And if I looked at their website, I said, it's true. They are 100% about achieving this for their customer organizations.
Mm.
It used to be about the tech. It used to be about features. But now they're about outcomes, and they understand the outcome that matters. Okay. And my drive over the years has always been, stop talking about tech features and functions, for heaven's sake. You know, in order for you to be in the market, everyone expects that you're going to have features and functions to get the job done. Really, would you please stop? It's boring already. You've got to talk about what people really care about. And that's changed over time, right? So that what people really care about, which has driven their loyalty to brands, has changed over time. Yeah. Now it's becoming this. Okay. It's not necessarily that they want the chief exec to put on a green banana leaf suit and dance around the street with ecological demonstrators, but it's that they expect a responsible, ethical capitalism, right? So that the board of directors can sit their kind of 8, 9, 10 year old children around the board table with them and explain the policies that they are enacting in their supply chain and justify it at a human level when they say, but you know, mommy, why isn't that child in Vietnam able to go to school? Because you're not paying the family enough. Why? Right. And the answer would be, well, I because I need that extra 0.2 0.02% margin on my bottom line for the shareholders. Why? Why do you need that? Do the shareholders agree with that? So the next step is to say to shareholders, well, invest in us if you're willing to put children through school in Vietnam, because you're going to have to take up 0.02% less profit the next year, because we've had it. We're tired of not doing the right thing. We are now going to focus on doing the right thing. So that is what I'm arguing here, is that the barometer is moving very, very quickly, and you might not see it yet. You don't necessarily have to believe me, because hey, it's going to happen, right? Those conditions are shifting, and the race is now on to be the first company in your competitive environment to be able to attach the brand to a set of principles or to a purpose that is important to your target audience, and that is important to the best of your suppliers, and that is important to the people who you want to work for you. Because if you do not embody those things, then the people you want to work for you will go and work for someone else. And the people who you want to sell to will go and buy from someone else. Black and white.
Absolutely. So I'm just thinking about our listeners. Our listeners are probably in that category of your target audience, actually, Steve. They're probably people who've made their way through organizations, grown up in a shareholder value environment, but their personal sensitivities are probably attuned more to the future than the past. What's the best thing they can do apart from buying your book?
So first thing I wanted to say is that my belief is that this has to be all about making more profit. Okay, otherwise businesses are not going to do it. And we need businesses to do this. I can tell you there's 200 million plus businesses in the world, all right? And business people running and working in them. There's only a few hundred governments, all right? So we need those businesses to conclude that they will make more profit as a consequence of doing the right thing. Right. The only way that we can prove that is by making, at this point in time, perhaps a leap of faith. That is saying, actually, we believe in this shift. Mm. We believe that we will have a strategic vulnerability as a business if we are not clean.
Yeah.
And we'll have a strategic vulnerability if we don't grab that marketing message and that purpose-led marketing message and go and beat the hell out of it in the marketplace. Because someone else, someone who may be less clean than us, might grab that marketing message and beat us to it. And once they own the loyalty of that customer base and those employees, you're just too late, right? So I think that the trick is to understand the size of the risk for you. Now you do that, and this is where I use normal strategy models. I mean, this is what your business should be doing, and many businesses are not. What I'm talking about here, I guest speak in the MBA for strategy at Warwick Business School, and I my purpose there is to bring strategy models to life and to make them simple and easy to understand. In the space of 90 minutes, you've used all of those interlocked strategy models, the strategy diamond, Porter's value chain, five forces, my five horizons model. There's a variety of models that you bring together. And in the space of 90 minutes, you've gained so much, and you've got people to truly understand the different reasons why things need to be done in a different way. So I think it is kind of, and that's part of the book as well, actually, is to try and bring these to life a little bit, just to demonstrate the ease of use and the interlocks and how you can make this real, so that over five time horizons into the future, this is the current time horizon and five future horizons, you can depict what you anticipate needs to happen. And you can also describe the conditions that might change over time that enables you to see when, whoop, I thought that was going to be in horizon three, but it's happening now. I'm going to bring that initiative into horizon two and move, right? Mm. Don't be surprised by things. Be ready, right? But be ready with the strategic thinking that you're using the strategy diamond for, and all of the rest of it, okay? And then when you're doing that, you use the other aspect of Five Horizons, which is to look not only at your own value chain, from a porter's value chain perspective, everything that goes on in your business and your environment, but to interlock with four others to create five value chain horizons. So look two steps before you and two steps after you, and look for the vulnerabilities that exist. Look for the harm that might be being done. Look for the opportunities to do things a bit better, and bring that together and assemble it into a series of bold steps that you could do. You might choose not to, but you could do them at different points in your five time horizons. And then examine the conditions that should exist that would enable you to do that in a way that's going to cost as little as possible, but have the greatest possible leverage on company profits and brand equity. So that's the balancing act, right? Yeah. This is why you need a strategic mindset, and why you need to have ease of fluency with how to do these things. But that is the thinking, what I just articulated. And that's how, hopefully in the space of a couple hundred pages, I've tried to convey this in such a way that people can go, I've got it. That's pretty damn straightforward, really. It's not scary for my shareholders.
Yeah.
It gets scary when you've got a chief executive is going, yeehaw, let's just, take 20% less profit and do good for everybody. The other green shoot I noticed, by the way, is after I spoke at the technology supply chain CIC in the Midlands in the UK a few weeks ago, the guy that came up straight after my keynote was a chief executive of a social enterprise recruitment company. And when this whole social enterprise thing started being talked about 20 years ago, whatever it was, I remember people saying, why wouldn't you just start a charity? And the guys that were doing it were saying, well, it's profit with a purpose.
Yeah.
We need to make sure part of our profit is used to do good adjacent to ourselves in the value chain. So this guy did exactly that. Now, he was brought in, a very experienced chief executive was brought into this recruitment company a couple of years ago when it was failing. Mm. And it's now a multi-million pound operation. He cannot recruit enough people to cope with the demand for his services. And his message was really simple. He said, if you want to look for ways to do good stuff through your value chain, look for people with social enterprise or charities that are doing things that you need to get done in your value chain.
Yeah.
And try to see if you can work with them.
Brilliant.
And I tell you, there were a whole load of kind of polo shirts and fleeces around the room. These managing directors of family businesses that they inherited from their dads, and they just cleaned up off the grease from under their nails in the room. Yeah. And they were looking around. They'd listened to my thing, and one of the guys came up to me. He owns a boat trailer company, and he said, "I want to work with you because we've been doing what we do for 63 years. It's been a great lifestyle business, but I need to do something different. Mm. I can see it now. I see the writing on the wall.
Yeah,
this is the future." And I took great reassurance from that. It was a total flip, and it was so real. So I've documented an approach for him. I'm going to have an affiliate of mine work more closely with his business, and I'll dip in there occasionally. But the framework is what counts, right? You've got to get his people and his family and his suppliers looking and thinking differently about what they're going to say to their target market and why that target market is going to respond favorably to what they do differently.
Love it. Steve, do you know what? I could talk to you all day. It's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for going through the detail there, because I think what you've done by going through the detail is actually demonstrate that this is not scary stuff that you're talking about. This is something that organizations can pick up, grab and go and run with. And I think that's critical, as you say, to get to that tipping point, which it does to me too, feels like we're right there. And I'm looking forward to our conversations over the next few years as we start observing some organizations, probably organizations of which some of the listeners are working in right now, starting to do things visibly very differently, even though, as you say, it may not be forced upon them. They're actually grasping this right now and running with it. Thanks for that. Tell us then, how can people listening at home, how can they get in touch? Anything you want to share with them as we close out the show?
So hopefully you'll find me on LinkedIn, but there is a Linktree site with all of my connection information. So if you're not sure what that is, it's linktr.ee/Steve Sanders without a U, so Steve Sanders. And my business is Business Growth Mechanics. Businessgrowthmechanics.com is the website, but you can access that through the Linktree. And there's a book site that I'd like you to take a look at, which is the 5horizonsbook.com. Not to be mistaken with the Pearl Jam site, but this is a 5horizonsbook.com. And in there, you'll be able to register interest by clicking a link. But I provide you with the introduction section to the book, a little bit about me, a little bit about the book itself, and the ability to register interest so that I can tell you when it comes open for pre-ordering and ordering on Amazon. This is going to be available around the world and ultimately in different languages too, but for the time being, you can at least visit that website and let me know you're interested.
Fantastic. Thank you, Steve. That was a real pleasure chatting to you on this edition of The Change Show, and I look forward to, as I say, catching up again soon as we start observing more and more organizations picking up on this thinking. So thanks for that. We're off. That was The Change Show. My name's Simon Phillips. We'll catch up again next week. Take care.